All right, so just as I expected, everybody is kind of pushed towards the back, so I want everybody in the first three rows. You don't have to sit in the first row, because I know it kind of feels like exposing, but like, the next two rows, that's where I want everybody. I'll wait. All right, so Dave asked me to speak about 2 weeks ago, and I was like, yeah, sure, because I mean, I don't want to say no to him, and I don't want to say no to God, because I know that I was asked for a reason. And that was 2 weeks ago. So about a week ago, I started writing, and I had about a paragraph done, and I was like, well, this is all I got. God, what else do you have for me? And then I completely forgot about it until 2 nights ago. And so 2 nights ago, I'm lying in bed, and I'm like, okay, there's winter run tomorrow. I have everybody's signatures ready. I have everything ready. And I'm thinking, and I'm like, I'm forgetting something. And as I'm lying in bed, I'm like, oh, no, I have to speak. And I have a paragraph, and it's tomorrow. And I was, like, freaking out. And so, yeah, I just started praying, and God gave me the words, which I hope I will be able to present to you. So, with, what's his name, Mark, spoke this morning?
Yes.
Yeah, with his speaking this morning, does anybody remember what a cornerstone is? None of you. There's about 25 of you in here. Nobody can remember what a cornerstone is. Okay. All right. So in biblical times, a cornerstone was used as the foundation or the starting point where a building was going to be constructed. So once it was in place, the rest of the building would be built on top of it. And from there, you could construct in different sizes, different angles. And if you remove the cornerstone, the entire building will collapse. All right, so I need 2 volunteers. Okay, you were already picked. No, Blue and Marley. Blue and Marley. All right, Marley, stand here. I'm gonna get you to stand over here. On the chair. On the chair, yeah. Now, if I would have had time, I would have gotten like a big cylinder block there, the ones that are like I can't even carry. But for now, for lack of time. This is going to be our cornerstone in Jesus. Okay, so this is where we build our life upon. This is how we build our life upon Jesus. That is one. This fell. This is building your cornerstone on the world. So anything that the world tells you, if you're building your life upon it, if you are going out and doing your own thing and completely disregarding Jesus, that's what this is going to symbolize. This is symbolizing putting your foundation in things other than Jesus. Marley, I want you to stand on it. Go ahead. All right. Good? Got your balance?
1 minute.
You good?
Yeah.
All right. So, while they stand there, I'm going to pick a couple different places that I have marked that talk about in the Bible where it talks about Jesus being the cornerstone. So Isaiah 28, verse 16, it says, "Therefore, this is what the sovereign Lord says. Look, I am placing a foundation stone in Jerusalem, a firm and tested stone. It is a precious cornerstone that is safe to build on. Whoever believes need never be shaken." Luke 20, verse 17 says, "Jesus looked at them and then said, 'Then what does the scripture mean? The stone that the builders rejected has now become the cornerstone.'" Acts 4:11 says, "For Jesus is the one referred to in the scriptures," stay on the block, "where it says, 'The stone that you builders rejected has now become the cornerstone.'" Ephesians 20:19-21 says, "So now you Gentiles are no longer strangers and foreigners. You are citizens among all of God's holy people. You are members of God's family. Together we are his house built on the foundation of the apostles and the prophets, and the cornerstone is Jesus Christ himself. We are carefully joined together in him, becoming a holy temple for the Lord." And the last one I have here is 1 Peter 2, verses 5 to 6. "And you are living stones that God is building into his spiritual temple. What's more, you are his holy priest. Through the mediation of Jesus Christ, you offer spiritual sacrifices that please God. As the scriptures say, 'I am placing a cornerstone in Jerusalem, chosen for great honor, and anyone who trusts in him will never be disgraced.'" Okay, so those are just a few places in the Bible where it talks about either Jesus being the cornerstone or anything about a cornerstone. So what does it mean that Jesus is our cornerstone? Does Anybody have any guesses? No? None? Okay. So if Jesus is our cornerstone, it means he is the one that we should be leaning on at all times. Just like when the entire house, like in biblical times when they would build the entire house on the cornerstone, that is how we should build our lives, but upon Jesus, not on a literal cornerstone. We are like that house. Jesus is the cornerstone of our house. With Jesus as our cornerstone, we always have someone to trust. We always have someone to put our lives, everything that we are, we have something to put it on. So, you good?
Yes.
All right. So, if you remember what I said this thing was, what is it? Jesus as our cornerstone. What was this one? The world as our cornerstone. Okay. Now, if an earthquake were about to happen right now, just a little one, not enough to break anything, who would stay on their cornerstone? Who would stay on their cornerstone? You guys can talk. I'm not going to bite you. Blue. Blue. What's your name?
Alexis.
Alexis. So who would stay on the cornerstone? Alexis would stay on the cornerstone. Okay? I can move this chair, right? She's good. She's pretty stable, okay? Now if I come up to Marley, she's already falling, and I nudge her just a little bit, where does she go? She goes on the ground, right? She's off, okay? Good, thanks. You guys can go sit down. All right, so I always use, I don't use analogies. I've only ever spoken once. But every time a pastor uses an analogy or any kind of, you know, like visible thing, I always remember it better. So just thought I'd do that so that you guys remember something out of this. When he asked me to speak, he told me to speak about Jesus as our cornerstone. And I didn't know exactly what he wanted me to do. So I was asking him about it. And in the end, I decided that I would just sort of share my testimony because it talks about how Jesus became the rock in my life. So, how did Jesus become my cornerstone? So I've shared my testimony with a few people, not preaching or anything, just like casual sit down for coffee or go out to eat or something. And I talked with my aunt at one point about it, and she was saying, wow, that's like really encouraging because I've gone through some of that stuff. I know other people who've gone through some of that stuff, and you could really like help people in their lives. So I decided that I would share it at my church, which I did, and now I'm sharing it here. So my life, when people think of a pastor's kid or someone who grew up in the church, they think of, you know, it's a good person, someone who isn't perfect but pretty close to it. That's how I used to think of people that grew up in the church, people that I'd known my whole life that went to the church, the people who were always in the front, who were raising their hands in worship, who were constantly praying out loud, speaking in tongues, everything like that. I thought, wow, they have such perfect lives. That's what I want to be one day. It's completely wrong. They do not have perfect lives. Some of them have worse lives than the people sitting in the back with their heads down the entire time. So I grew up in church, and I've known God my entire life. My parents have been Christians since I was born. Before that, my mom had been a Christian all her life. So I don't actually know when I accepted Jesus in my life. I just know that it happened at some point. I do know that I got baptized when I was 11, 10 or 11, one of those years. Actually accepting Jesus into my life, I don't know when it happened. I've always gone to camp, Silver Bridges Camp, my entire life. I grew up with Christian friends, Christian family. Everybody around me was pretty much Christian because I didn't have very many friends in school, so I spent a lot of time with my family and my family's friends. So I grew up a lot faster than a lot of people did. I was about 12 years old, and things started to kind of get weird because I was going into, I think, 8th grade, and a lot of my friends kept asking me things about Jesus, and I didn't really know how to answer them because I only had, like, the basic Sunday school answers for them. So I kind of just, like, shied away from people when they would talk to me. And then when I was 12, my grandmother, who I was really close to, she ended up passing away. I used to go to her house, like, every weekend. We'd watch movies. She'd buy me pizza pockets or pepperettes because that's just what we did. We'd watch movies. We'd play Skip-Bo. I don't know if you guys have ever played that. It's really fun. Joe's played it. So yeah, we would go there, we'd play games, my aunt would come sometimes, and we'd have movie marathons. I'd go there literally every weekend, so she was the closest, almost the closest family member I had. And then she passed away. So, after that, I kind of fell into a depression, but it wasn't really a depression that anybody could see on the outside. It was more of an inward depression. I don't know where I am. Yeah, I kept to myself. I didn't hang out with anybody. I never really had a lot of friends, but the few friends that I did have, I kind of just shut them out of my life. I didn't talk to them. I went a couple months without talking to one of my friends, and by the time we did end up hanging out, it was so awkward that I didn't know what to say. So yeah, I would just stick to myself. I'd sit in my room. I'd read. I didn't want to have anything to do with anybody, especially not God. So that summer, because my parents forced me to go to things, I went to camp. I think it was my last year of kids camp. So I went to kids camp. I went to kids church. And we went to family camp. And then at family camp, during kids church, I was filled with the Holy Spirit. So I began speaking in tongues, which was really odd because I was like, what am I saying? So yeah, after that summer, it was amazing. It was like a complete renewal of myself. But when the summer was over, back to school, I had my alone time in my room. Things kind of got sucky again. So all those old feelings came back, and I fell into depression again, and I wasn't hanging around with the right people, and life sucked. When I was 13, I went into high school. I was young, but I was born in December, so it happens. Then my best friend moved away. She'd been my best friend for 4 years, and I didn't really talk to anybody else because during that sucky time in my life, she was the only one who would, like, force herself into my life and actually make a point to be there. All my other friends, they were like, whatever, you do your own thing. I'm not going to have anything to do with you because you're bringing the mood down. This was my only friend that actually made a point to come and see me. She made a point to call me, made a point to text me to make sure I was doing okay, ask me in the morning how I slept, everything. So she was the only person I actually connected with and could talk to about things. And when she moved away, I felt alone. I didn't feel like I could talk to my family. I had family and friends all around me, but none of them that I felt that would understand what I was going through, because I just had this perfect image in my mind of how they were and what their lives were like, and I just thought they were perfect, and I was the nuisance. I was the one who was just going to bring their lives down, and I shouldn't have anything to do with them, so I didn't tell anybody anything. So my best friend moved away right before I went to high school, so I went into high school with no friends, like, at all. My first year of high school, I was trying to fit in anywhere I could, which is never a good thing. You should always have your small group of friends that you can connect with instead of having 1,000 other friends that are just going to bring you down and get you into things that you shouldn't be doing. So I started hanging out with people I shouldn't be, or I shouldn't have. I started smoking. I had an addiction to smoking for just under a year, maybe. And then I started hanging around with a couple people in maybe 10th grade. 9 or 10, like the end of 9, beginning of 10th. And when people talk about addictions to pornography, they think of men, which is completely stupid because it happens to girls too, because it happened to me. When I was 13, I developed an addiction to pornography. I was not proud of it at all. But it was just something that had happened. It would happen once, I'd say, okay, that's it. It would happen another time, and I'd say, okay, God, I'm sorry, that's it. It happened every day. And in the end, I didn't even apologize in the end because I was like, it's going to happen tomorrow. It's going to happen the next day, so why apologize? Why don't I just wait until I know for sure I'm done with this addiction, and then I'll apologize. So at 14 years old, I met a girl, and we became friends. I could talk to her fairly easily, not as good as I could my other friend, but easily enough. And when we hung out, she never really judged me because her life was way worse than mine. But she wasn't a good influence in my life. A lot of you have friends that you think, yeah, we're going to be best friends forever. Yeah, she's going to be the maid of honor at my wedding. She's going to be the bridesmaid at my wedding. I want her to be the godmother of my children. But really, those friends, you're not going to have them all your life. You're going to have the friends who have stuck by you through everything, not the ones who have talked behind your back, not the ones who you have to forgive constantly for doing stupid things to you. You're going to have the one friend that stuck with you through everything. So this girl I was hanging out with, I thought she was my best friend. She started talking about being behind my back. She started making up rumors about me. She started getting me into things I shouldn't be doing. I would go out partying. I would go out drinking. I would get high. I would do all sorts of stuff. She wasn't a good influence in my life at all. When I was 15, I started working at Tim Hortons, which sucked. Don't ever work there. And if you do, I'm sorry. But it was a good distraction at the time because I wouldn't be alone in my room, so there's no chance to look at pornography. I'd be at work, I'd go home, I'd go to sleep, I'd go to school, I'd go to work, and repeat. So it was a good distraction at the time. Then this guy came into school. Not school, sorry. This guy that came to my school came into Tim Hortons, and he was like one of my friend's friends, and whenever they would come in, I'd always get them a cup larger than they asked for. They got a small hot chocolate. I'd give them a medium, but only make them pay for a small, which I could have gotten fired for, but whatever. So he came in. He asked for a medium French vanilla. I gave him a large. He messaged me that night and said, he said, why'd you give me a large? And I was like, oh, just for fun. And then that was it. But a week later, I saw him in school, and he started talking to me. And we started talking for about 2 months. And then, you know, I'm a girl. I get feelings. I get attached. So I got attached. And then we started dating. And then, so after 2 months of hanging out, just casually hanging out, he asked me out, so we started dating. 2 weeks into the relationship, I started hearing things, but I wasn't, like, completely sure, and I was, like, head over heels for this guy, so I was, like, believing him over what his friends were telling me, or what everybody else in school was telling me, and I just couldn't put it together in my head. Like, I knew something was up, but I didn't want to admit it to myself. About 2 weeks later, I found out that the reason, I found out that the night at Tim Hortons I gave him the large French vanilla was the night that him and his friends made a bet that out of their little group of 6 friends, they would all pitch in $100 and whoever slept with me first would get that pile of money. So that's why he was dating me. I found that out, we broke up. I was heartbroken. I cried. My mom asked what was up. I didn't tell her. She knew we were dating, but she didn't think it was, like, very serious. So about 2 weeks after that, he came to my house and he apologized. It was like this really sappy apology, like, I didn't mean it. I didn't know how great a girl you were. It was like the movies there where they're like, you're the first thing I think about when I wake up, and you're the last thing I think about when I go to sleep. That kind of thing. Okay, it was stupid. I was like, why did I fall for that in the end there? But I did. So we went out for another 2 weeks. And then I found out that the bet was still on. I'm like, oh my gosh, like, when is this going to end? So I broke up with him. And then teenagers are stupid, right? And, like, I'm no exception. And you can all admit that you're stupid. None of you are perfect. So he came back 2 weeks to 3 weeks later, apologized again, and I forgave him again because I'm stupid. He was my first real boyfriend because I'd never kissed anyone, and I kissed him, which was a complete mistake. But the one night we were walking, and we were walking with another one of my friends, that girl I'd been talking about. I hadn't really hung out with her much, but she was with us that night. And so we walked her to her house. And then I walked with him back to his house, and we went downstairs into his bedroom. Never a good idea. I did not sleep with him, thank God, but I almost did. But I got out, I called my dad, I broke up with him that night, and I was like, that's it, God, like, you need to help me through this because I will never be able to let go of this person in my life because I was attached to him, and no matter how much he made me want to hate him, no matter how much he did stupid things that made me heartbroken, I still liked him. Like, those feelings don't just go away. So I wasn't over him. I was still heartbroken about our relationship ending. So I went back to the only thing I could think of doing, which was self-harming. I would do it when my parents weren't home. I would do it when they were home. I would do it whenever I could. I just put it in spots that I would never, like, I wear pants all the time. I wear shirts all the time. I would put it in places that they wouldn't be able to see it because I didn't want to be confronted about anything serious in my life. Because my family was perfect. They had two perfect sons, and I was the outcast daughter. I was the disappointment. I didn't want them to know about any of this stuff going on in my life. So the one night, I just gotten out of the shower, and I messaged one of my friends because when she was in eighth grade, she had been self-harming, and I had helped her through it. And I promised myself I would never do it, but it happened. So I messaged her because I know she had gotten over it. And so I asked her, I said, how did you get over it? Because I've been doing it for a while now, and it's just really hard, and it's like the only thing that makes me feel something other than this heartache. She took a really long time to respond. And then later I found out that was because she had told her mom, and she said, I'm sorry I told my mom, she's going to tell your mom, she's going to give you till tomorrow to tell her yourself, but that's the only thing that got me through it was somebody telling my parents, because they got me the help I needed. I was angry, but that night I went to my mom, I showed her my scars, and she cried, my dad cried, but I was like, I want it to come from me, not from somebody else's mom. So I went and told them myself, and... yeah, they were not angry. They were disappointed, but not in the way that made me feel like I was nothing. They made me feel like I was loved, that they were disappointed that they felt that I felt that I couldn't go talk to them, but they always made me feel loved. About 2 or 3 weeks later, I went to the movies in town for a youth night. I don't remember what movie we were watching. Probably made me cry, though. And when we walked out of the theater, I saw that guy I'd been dating. He was walking by with a whole bunch of his friends. And I told my uncle and my dad, I was like, guys, that's the guy. It's like, you guys should, like, go do something. And then my uncle's like, yeah, we should, like, chase him down the street yelling. And I'm like, well, we don't want to make him cry. Because, you know, my parents are intimidating. So, yeah, they didn't do anything, obviously, because, you know, they're youth pastors. They don't want to get charged for anything. it's true. Can't have the youth pastor running after youth down the street. So on Friday nights I go to my uncle's house. Me and my aunt's there too, but she was gone. I don't know. She was gone somewhere. So just me and my uncle and his older one now, Matthew. And he put him to bed, and I was sitting on the counter downstairs, or at the counter downstairs, and I was like flicking through Netflix, looking for a movie because we always watch a movie on Friday nights. And he came downstairs, and he came up to me, and he was like, are you okay? I'm like, yeah, I'm fine. Why? He's like, well, you kind of looked weird when you said that guy's here. I was like, what guy? He's like, the guy that you saw at the theater. And I'm like, oh, yeah, like, it's just something that happened a while ago. He's like, okay. And he let it go. We got about halfway into the movie, and he was like, are you sure you're okay? He paused the movie. I'm like, what are you doing? He's like, are you sure you're okay? I'm like, oh, like, man, just let it go. I don't want to talk about it. Like, it's something that happened. It's over now. I'm over it. It has nothing to do with my life anymore. He's like, okay. So he plays the movie. 10 minutes later, he looks at me and says, sometimes all you need is a good hug. And he hugged me, and I completely broke down. That was the first time I had broken down in front of anyone about the situation that happened with that guy. I probably cried for like 20 minutes, honestly. He had snot on his shirt and tears, and it was just a mess. After he was done hugging me, you know, like, we talked about it, and my one question was, how do you stop missing someone? Because I missed him. As much as he had ruined my life, as much as he had broken my heart, as much as he had completely ruined my idea of what my life was supposed to be like, I still missed him. And he said it just takes time. I was like, well, that's not helpful. Like, I want it to be over now. But yeah, so after this whole thing, it was a couple months later, camp came along. How much time do I have? Oh, jeez. Camp came along, and everything was great. Everything's always great at camp. There's Christian people everywhere. There's nothing that can really drag me down, except for the few people in the corner there that are just there because their parents make them go. But I don't really hang around with those people. I hung around with my friends, the ones that were Christians, the ones that would uplift me, the ones that would, you know, tell me everything's going to be okay and pray for me and everything. And at youth camp, I prayed about my addiction to pornography. I'd gone all summer without giving into it. And then after youth camp, school came back. And that's where the feelings come back. So I thought I was over my addiction because I'd gone all summer, and that was the longest I'd gone without it. But school came back, and I figured out that I wasn't over it. When I began this addiction, I was 13 years old. I'd been hanging out with the wrong people. They showed me what it was, and I was really curious when I was younger, so I began to look at it on my own, which was completely stupid. The first year when I was 13, I didn't think I was really affected by it because I was like, gosh, this is something like this stupid. I look at it like once a month. Like, come on, guys, it's not serious. But after a year, I realized that instead of the random time every month, it was the random time every week. It was the random time every day. It was the random time every hour. It got so bad that it was every hour. Any spare time I had, any time my parents weren't home, any time I was in my room alone, even if my parents were home, it was just any time I could. I hid what was going on for about 3 years. I didn't tell anybody this for 3 years. Before camp this year, like this past year, I knew I wouldn't be able to be this addicted to it during the summer because I was at camp all summer. I was literally there for a month, and then I went home for a week, and I was there for 2 weeks, and I was home. So I was there all summer, and there's no Wi-Fi there. I don't have 3G, so I was like, how is this going to work? So at camp, I was at camp for a month, which I always feel so fresh and so alive when I'm at camp, so I didn't feel any need to watch it. I didn't really notice that I hadn't because, you know, I was just busy all day, and then I would go to bed, and we only had 6 hours to sleep because we were counselors, so I'd sleep. I wouldn't be thinking about anything else. I would just sleep. At family camp, which was about 2 weeks later, I asked my best friend to be my accountability partner, and she asked for what, and I didn't tell her the first couple of days because I didn't want her to, like, judge me, which was stupid because she's always been there for me, and so I knew she wouldn't. So I asked her to be my accountability partner, and I eventually told her why. I said, because I have an addiction to pornography, and I need you to keep me accountable. I need you to message me literally every day, multiple times a day, to make sure I'm doing okay. She's like, okay, I'll do it. And that was it. She left it at that. She would message me every day. She would message me multiple times a day. 2 weeks after family camp, I was going to youth camp. And I still hadn't given in to my addiction to pornography. But it was kind of always in the back of my head. So at youth camp, one of the speakers, his name was Ben. His name's Ben Council. And he was talking the one night about how he had an addiction to pornography since he was 11 years old till the time he was 22 years old. I was like, I don't want that to be me. Like, in my head, I was like, I don't want that to be me. I don't want to be able to say I've had an addiction to pornography from 13 till 23. I don't want that for my life. So all week, I had these thoughts in my head about how I could get over this. How could I do it by myself? How can I get over it without telling anybody else? So I realized I couldn't. And all week, I had this one verse in my head, and it says, when Jesus had tasted it, he said, it is finished. Then he bowed his head and released his spirit. If you've ever read this verse, it's John 19. It's when Jesus is being crucified. He's on the cross. He's about to die. He said, one of the last things he said was, it is finished. And the way I took this that week was that Jesus, when he died on the cross for us, he took everything in our lives. He didn't just take the things for the people that were alive at the time. He took everything from every generation that was to come, every generation that had passed, everything. He took everything from everyone so that everybody can make it to heaven. Oh, this is the wrong page. It's all good. I was talking to the guy that was speaking. His name's Ben. And we all had altar time, so we're all coming up to the front altar, and I'm standing there with my head closed, my hands out like this, and I'm praying, and I'm like, God, I know you can help me through this, but I feel like I'm too weak, and I need your strength. And then I look down, and I see feet in front of me, and I'm like, I look up, and he's, like, kind of tall, so I'm like, yes? He's like, I feel like I need to pray for you. I'm like, okay. About what? He's like, I'm not sure. I'm like, I don't want to just tell this guy what's going on. But he was like, I'm going to go pray for some other people, and I'll be back. I'm like, okay. So I'm standing there, my hands out, and I'm just kind of like singing and playing the music. And I look randomly, and he's walking up and down the aisle, pray for people. And then he comes back to me. And I felt like this tugging at my heart consistently while he was gone. So when he got there, I told him everything. I said, since I was 13 years old, I've had an addiction to pornography. I can't get over it myself. Every summer I do great. I go back to school and it happens again. And I said, when you shared about your addiction, I said, it made me realize that I don't want that for my life, that I don't want to be stuck in this for 10 years like you were. And he was like, okay, I'm going to pray for you. I'm like, okay, great. So I'm standing there and he puts his hands on top of my hands and I'm like, anytime now. And he's just standing there. I'm like standing there like this. And then it's getting a little bit awkward. So I'm like, and he goes, I can't pray for you. I'm like, what? What do you mean you can't pray for me? You're asking people if they want prayer. And I didn't say this aloud, but it's in my head. I'm like, and I asked for prayer, and you said no. So he's like, I can't pray for you because I can't pray for something that's already gone. I'm like, what does that mean? He said, it is finished. I'm like, mind blown. I've been thinking that all week. All week, that verse has been in my head. It is finished. When Jesus said that, he's like, I can't pray for something that is already finished. I'm like, so what does that mean? He's like, you're already freed from your addiction to pornography. And I'm like, what? Like, it's just summer. Like, this happens every summer. Like, you don't even know me. You don't know my life. And he's like, you're free. And then he left. I'm like, standing there, and I'm like, okay. So should I go sit down now? So I didn't sit down. I kept, like, singing and that. And then I went and sat down, and we had tuck after. And that night, I went and found him when we were at the dining hall. And I asked him if I could talk to him. And I was like, how do I know that it's finished? He's like, well, don't you feel something? I'm like, what am I supposed to feel? And so he was telling me about how when he was freed, he felt this huge breath of relief, and he felt like he could tell people what he went through without being ashamed of it because he wasn't in that sin anymore. He was like, go try it. Try what? He's like, go tell someone. Go tell someone you had an addiction to pornography for 3 years. Go do it. Tell me how you feel. I'm like, seriously? He's like, yeah, go tell someone. I'm like, this has been like the hugest secret of my life, and you just want me to go up to some random person and tell him. He's like, yep. Like, can I go tell someone I know? He's like, nope, someone you don't know. Okay, so I walk over to this person, and I start a conversation with him. I don't remember who he was because I think I blacked out during this. But I'm talking to him, and I'm sitting there. I was like, so, I just wanted to tell you something. He's like, okay. And I'm like, for 3 years I had an addiction to pornography, and I told him, like, the whole story. He was like, wow. And he looks at me, he goes, can I just say something? I'm like, yeah. He goes, I've had an addiction to pornography for 5 years. I'm like, okay. He's like, and I feel like because you've told me this, I feel like there is hope. I feel like I can get over this. I feel like Jesus is actually there. And I'm like, oh. And I started crying because I'm emotional. Anyways, so, yeah, then I went back to this guy, Ben, and I was like, oh, my gosh. He's like, what happened? He's like, I saw you crying. What happened? I'm like, well, I started a conversation with him. I told him everything. And then he told me he had one. And then he was like, I feel like there's hope. And I'm just blurting this all out to Ben. I'm still crying. And I'm like, he's like, see? How easy was it? And I was like, it was pretty easy. Like I don't feel like they're judging me anymore because I as far as I've been told, as far as I feel, I'm free of this addiction. So, as of today, I'm 7 months, 10 days clean of this addiction. So yeah, I haven't had the urge to do it at all. I haven't, that's the basics of it. I just haven't wanted to do it at all. I haven't been depressed like I used to be. And I've recently realized that there are so many people. I have three friends in Cochrane. Three friends that I feel like I can tell things to. And I've realized that even if I didn't have them, I would still have so much family and so many friends around me that I could tell things to, and I'm not embarrassed, and I'm not shy, and I don't feel like a disappointment anymore. I'm nowhere near perfect. I make stupid mistakes all the time. I probably made like 10 mistakes this morning. I don't know what they are, but I probably have. If God gave me a list, there'd probably be 10 under today's date. So, I'm nowhere near perfect, but I can tell you for a fact that I am a better person. I used to be... I'm almost done. Like 2 minutes. I've never gone over my time. It's always under my time. But anyways, yeah, I'm nowhere near perfect, but I can tell you I'm a better person. Because I used to be so mean. I would not want people to know anything about me, so I would just consistently push them away. People would come up to me at school. I'd walk away, or I'd say some rude and something stupid, a stupid comment that I knew would probably ruin their day, but I didn't care at the time. But I can tell you for a fact that I am a better person now. So when Dave asked me to share my testimony, I was like, that they're all youth. It's like, I'm going to be speaking to all youth. I said, youth are the most judgmental of all people. No offense to you guys. I'm sure you're angels. but I was like, no, youth are, it's true, youth compared, I mean, kids to adults. The youth are the most judgmental of all people. And I can tell you because I know I'm still judgmental and I work on it, but it just happens. I was like, I don't really want to share this because I have to share about personal things and like my friends are in this group. I don't want them to know. I was like, oh, but I'll do it anyways because I guess you want me to. So, yeah, I did it. And that was just, my entire testimony was just to say that God has become my cornerstone. And the cornerstone of how is kind of a confusing, like, question. But it's basically just to say, how did he become mine and how can he become yours? He can become yours if you just let go of everything and completely put your trust in him. Because once I did that, I felt such a huge breath of release. I had been trapped for 4 years in my own mind. Since my grandmother had died, which was 4 years before I was completely freed from everything, I was trapped in what I didn't even know I was trapped in. I thought it was fine. I thought it was just a regular teenager with, like, regular teenage problems. But because I know Jesus, my problems, they're not bigger, but he's bigger than them. So that's all just to say that he can become your cornerstone if you let him. You have to let him into your heart. He won't. He wants to. But it's you guys that have the stubborn hearts and won't let him. So after I let him become my cornerstone, my life got so much easier. It's still stressful. It still makes me panic. Like, I was panicking coming up here. I still have problems. I still sin. I still have sucky stuff that happens in my life. But with Jesus, I always know that there is hope and that there is always a place to go when there's nobody else I feel like I can talk to. So, yeah. That is what I had to say. Okay. Lord Jesus, thank you for this group of wonderful girls. I thank you that they have soft hearts because if they didn't, they wouldn't be here. God, you've called everybody here for a reason. And so, God, I pray that if my message didn't touch anybody, God, that it touched one person. Because one person that is actually listening, one person that will be touched and come into your arms is better than a whole room full of people who clapped for me without even knowing why they clapped. So, God, I just thank you for these girls, and I pray that this would touch their hearts and that they would begin to believe that you can be their cornerstone and that they can put their lives in you. And I pray for this weekend and that everybody feels renewed and alive. In Jesus' name, amen.